Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aviation Sustainability Africa podcast. It's a podcast that explores the implication of socioeconomic sustainability and climate change for the global aviation industry, in particular focus on the African continent. It features interviews with experts from airline, airport, civil aviation authorities, think tanks, tourism bodies, and other organizations with emphasis on ESG. The podcast will help us to gain insights onto the latest trends and developments in the challenges and possible solutions, technological innovations, and the changing mindset towards sustainability in the aviation industry. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm privileged to let you know that today we are having Jed Brown on the show. Jed is the founder and CEO of Low Season Traveler and also the CEO of the Climate Friendly Travel Club, which is a new initiative by the SunX program. Welcome on the show, Jed.
Great to see you, Tony. Always a pleasure to catch up with you. Great to see you, man.
Fantastic. So we'll just dive in right into the show. This sustainability flight is going to last us approximately 45 minutes, and we're going to discuss everything about around low season travel, the SunX program, and generally about aviation and sustainability with regard to the tourism and aviation ecosystem. So, yeah, tell me about Low Season Traveler. What are you guys about?
What are we about? So we started up about 5 years ago, largely in response to growing over-tourism, which we were seeing in different parts of the world, certainly Europe, you know, places like Venice and Dubrovnik. What we were seeing is huge amounts of tourism surges during the summer months, and that was having a negative impact on the locals in those destinations. And also, you know, it was a negative travel experience. You know, who wants to travel when you're, you know, in throngs of other people and it's crowded? It's not a pleasant experience. But moreover, we feared a little bit for the world of tourism. So I started to look into this, and I quickly realized that having traveled myself during the low season months, the quiet times of the year in these destinations, I thought it's a better time to travel usually, because the reasons that I travel are I want to experience the culture, the heritage, the people. The people is a huge amount of why I travel. And all of that stuff is there during the quiet time of the year as much as it's there during the busy time of the year when everyone else goes. So I figured, okay, let's see if there's any other organizations that do this. And there was none. So I set up Low Season Traveler as a website and media company, I suppose, to educate people to try and travel during the low season months as a better alternative to the peak seasons. And, you know, you're also delivering an economic impact to these destinations at a time when they need it. They don't need more tourists in the peak season months. They've got enough. Any destination, they've got enough. Where they need the economic impact of tourism is during the low season months. So that's what we do. So through the website, we are the only travel website that focuses only on the low season months in each destination. And we talk about what there is to do, why it's a great time to visit, and why they should give it a try. We also have a magazine, which we started. We're on edition number 7 now, which has been really well received. And it's the world's first travel magazine completely dedicated to the low season travel experience. And it's a lot of fun, apart from anything else, Tony. We have our podcast. And I know you're a big fan of podcasts, Tony, as well. Our podcast's been running now for 5 years. And that's where we speak to locals in each of the destinations. And we say, look, you know, you're a local of Nigeria. Tell us, you know, is Nigeria worth seeing during the quiet times of the year? And you know, every one of the guests just rave about their destination in the low season months. You know, they love it. So we hear from the locals why they love their destination during the quiet times of the year and why they recommend it. And then we also do TV programs as well. I recently went out to Tahiti and Barbados and a few other places. I was in Kenya last year, where we showcase. We go during the low season months with a film crew, and we show people this is the reality of the rainy season in Kenya, and it's not raining all the time, and the wildlife is still there, and it's a wonderful experience. Don't be put off by it. So that's what we've been doing for the past 5 years, and it's a lot of fun, and we're starting to make good progress, Tony, but it's still a little bit of a challenge. There's still a fear, I think, for some people to travel during the low season months. They fear you know, will things be open? Will the weather be pleasant or not pleasant? And it's for us, it's about trying to alleviate that fear and let them know that, you know, it's a great experience. And also it's a more responsible thing to do. You know, we're all trying to do the right thing via the climate and the environment, and to travel during the low season months when it's not as crowded is ultimately a more responsible thing to do as well.
Thanks, Jed. I think this is the low season traveler concept is very innovative. Before we come to the sustainability part of things, let's say a little bit that on the economic side of things. I mean, it's refreshing to know that, I mean, these destinations can still earn even at low seasons, because what you normally would not hear is a business shut down during low season because there's no patronage. But again, this also answers to over-tourism, because again, people are saying, why do you want to indulge in over-tourism that kind of, you know, impacts the environment and impacts on the communities? So this is a great initiative that is, for me, a win-win. However, yep. I look at it, you know, both for the tourists and both for the communities that they visit. So tell me, how does this also impact from the climate side of things? Because I know you are multi-pronged with this, your innovation. It's very exciting, both from the economic side of sustainability and the environmental side of sustainability. Can you please share some more light on the environmental impact of low season travel?
Yeah, of course, Tony. And it's an important part of it that a low season traveler, we I don't think we've done enough to communicate this, because the reality is in most destinations in the world, there is a season, you know, so there is a high season where most travelers tend to travel during those key months. And the challenge has been that in the high season, you're building hotels that are going to be full during the high season months, and they're practically empty, you know, 20, 30% occupied during the low season months. Now, to build stuff, you know, concrete, the built environment, that accounts for 30% of all global emissions. That's a pretty well accepted fact. So building stuff accounts for about 30% of global emissions. My question that I ask our travelers is it right? Is it good use of those emissions to build properties, hotels, that are sat empty for 6 months of the year? Is that sustainable? Is that the best use of that resource? Of course it's not. Yet what we find all over the world is, you know, resorts and destinations are building more hotels that they know are only going to be filled for 6 months of the year. That's irresponsible. For me, again, I look at the macroeconomics of what's going on in the world, and we know that tourism globally is set to double in the next 10 years. Double. Now, imagine that, Tony. It took us about 100 years from tourism first starting off in kind of Europe 100 years ago in the early 1900s, and it gradually built up to, in 2019, it built up to about 1.4 billion international arrivals. What we're looking at is in 10 years, so 100 years to build up to that, in another 10 years to double it. That's a big problem, my friend. That's a massive problem. Yeah. Now, where's that growth coming from? You've got a growing middle class. This isn't just about the world population. So we know the world's population is still increasing but slowing down. We hit 8 billion global population in November last year. However, it's more about where each of those people are up to. What we've got is a population where we're starting to actually alleviate poverty. We're actually bringing people out of poverty into the middle class. And when we say middle class, we mean when you've got your own home, you've got an education, and you've got kids who are in education. And the key part is you've got disposable income. When people reach that stage where actually we've got food on the table, a roof over our head, and we've got money spare, they want to travel with that money, quite rightly. And they want to experience the world around us and the different cultures, whether that be within their own country or their own continent or intercontinental as well. And that's a good thing. But this middle class is growing rapidly, in particular in parts of Africa, by the way, in fact, indeed, in Nigeria. But also the big two, India and China. India and China alone are going to account for about 850 million of the next billion global middle class in the next 10 years. And they're going to want to travel. So we need to prepare our tourism destinations for a huge amount of growth in the next 10 years. Now, what are we going to do? Yeah. Are we going to build more hotels during the peak season months? Or are we going to actually fill the hotels that we've already got? We don't need to build. This is what I'm saying. We don't need to build any more properties. We don't need to build any hotels. We've got them all. We just need to get people to come during the quiet time of the year. The reason that they've never come during the quiet time of the year is summed up really nicely by a conversation I had with a lovely lady in Split in Croatia. Now, Split in Croatia, for your listeners, if they're not aware, it's a beautiful seaside resort in Croatia. So it's the Mediterranean coast. Typically, the peak season tends to be, you know, June through till about September. So, you know, Northern Hemisphere summer. And she said to me, you know, and by the way, they have incredible cultural heritage there. They've got ruins that are like Roman, Greek ruins. I mean, it's phenomenal. Really, it would blow your mind. Blow your mind. This lady said to me, I gave a talk on low season travel, and she said, yeah, but Mr. Brown, people come here for sunshine and warmth. And I said, okay. I said, can you tell me, as you're from the Tourism Promotion Bureau, how have you promoted Split in the past 20 years? And she started smiling. She said, well, you know, beaches, sunny, warm. I said, well, you know, you got the tourists that you were looking for then. What I'm saying to you is don't just talk about that. There are tourists out there that are interested, like me, I'm interested in culture and heritage. I don't care if it's sunny or rainy. Those ruins are still there and they're still amazing, absolutely amazing. And if I can go when it's less crowded, honestly, for me, that's a better experience because I'm not really into all the big crowds and stuff and, you know, queuing in line and all this kind of stuff. But also, you're going to fill your hotels at a time when, you know, they need filling. You don't need to build more hotels. So your original question on the sustainability element is we've got tourism about to double in the next 10 years. We know that there's going to be pressure on us not to build any more stuff. Because, you know, that accounts for 30% of global emissions. So we don't want to be building more hotels. And why would we? We just need to fill the hotels that we've got. If we promote our low seasons in a positive, proactive way to an audience that value things like meeting the people, discovering the culture, the heritage, the music, the dance, the food, all of that stuff is available all year round. So let's start talking about that stuff and let's get people to come during those times. And that is the most sustainable thing we can do for our destinations worldwide.
Thank you, Jen. This is an incredible conversation. Now, I want to bring you back to, you know, the hospitality bit of things around tourism, when you talk about hotels. I mean, I hear numbers with multinational hotels, but there are chains trying to expand and build more hotels in Nigeria. A particular brand wants to increase this number to 2025 to about 20, and etc. across the world. Now, coming from the sustainability part, tell me, do you think in your engagements, do you think this is something hotel or property developers will want to agree with you to say, you know what, we don't need more hotels, rather we need more occupancy rather than building more. So how do you attack this conversation from someone that wants to develop and build more hotels and build more resources and as it were?
For me, I think that they want to develop resorts. The developers, you know, I suggested this. Actually, I was at a hotel development conference organized by Bench Events, our friends there, who obviously also own and run Aviadev, which we know very well. I went to it was the African Hotel Investment Conference, and I was also at at the European one as well. And I raised it at the European one. And I said, you know, I actually think that you guys shouldn't be allowed to build any new properties until you've demonstrated that you've made maximum efforts to fill the properties that you've already built during the low season months all year round. I got laughed out of the place. Never going to happen. You know, we want to keep building stuff. They're in the business of building stuff, Tony. They're in the business of building stuff. They're going to keep building stuff. And they're going to keep it. And it's the easy way around it. But a lot of people are making a lot of money out of building stuff. So I think where it'll change is when governments start to legislate for this and say, you know what, we're actually not going to let you build stuff until you've demonstrated that you're trying to fill the stuff that you've already got. That's the only way I can see it changing. They'll keep doing it. When you talked before, Tony, about the international chains coming in, I was kind of smiling because I'm starting to solidify my opinion on international chains, because there's a lot of talk at the moment in my circles about economic leakage. So this is where you have tourists coming in, and for every £100 they spend, in some cases, about £90 of it is going back to the headquarters of the American or European company that own the company. I think that's what we're going to start calling out. And I think that's one of the next things. When we talk about responsible tourism, is it right that I book, and I'm not calling them out because they do a lot of good things, but if there's a big hotel brand and I book through that brand in the UK and it's an American-owned brand and I stay in that property in Nigeria, this American brand, on a full-board basis, so I eat all of my meals there as well, and then through that brand, they offer me a tour sightseeing in Nigeria as well, and all of my accommodations taken care of with that brand as well. All of the money, the economic impact to Nigeria is negligible. It's all ultimately going back to the headquarters. Is that right? Is that a responsible approach to tourism? I'm not sure that it is. So now when I'm traveling as a responsible traveler, one of the first things I'm looking at is, I want a locally owned and run property. I want to know that my money is going to stay in, if I go to Nigeria, I want to know that most of the money is staying in Nigeria. I want to know that the economic benefit of me being a traveler is going to remain in Nigeria, not go off to the US. But if I go to America, absolutely, I want to stay in an American branded hotel and make sure that my economic impact stays there. But what I get concerned about is a lot of the internationals coming into, you know, some of the developing parts of the world, and the economic leakage is significant. So, you know, is the economic impact of tourism as great? And slightly off on a tangent, it's similar when we talk about cruising. You know, I can't, the big cruise, for me, it's like the NRA of the travel industry. They've got more money than God, these big cruise guys. And all of the money stays with them. So you book to go on the cruise. Your accommodation is on the cruise. Your food is all included on the cruise. If you want to book a day trip on one of the stops, you pay for it with the company on the cruise ship, and then they go off. The economic impact to those visitors that call on the way to, you know, wherever in the South Pacific or the Caribbean is trinkets. They'll buy a few trinkets, $5 for a little souvenir key ring, but most of their money is staying on that cruise line. That to me is not right. That's not responsible. And I don't know why countries around the world are welcoming these huge big cruise lines as a port of call when the economic impact to them is tiny. So economic leakage, I think, is a big thing. And I think more and more consumers are going to start looking at that, being really honest about it, figuring out, you know what, is my money going to stay in the destination that I'm going to, especially if it's a developing nation as well?
I mean, you're spot on. This also has to do with, I mean, when we go to the Sun S program, I'm going to talk more about that, but that's coming to the airlines. I think there's also this conversation about, if I am traveling on an airline, what is the airline doing, you know, with the, what are the sustainable initiatives the airline are putting in place to cut carbon emission, or to, you know, to offset carbon, you know, with my traveling, you know, to see that they are doing something that is impactful to the community, having, you know, being by themselves also damaging the environment. So what are they doing? So each time I travel, how much more do they look to offset those carbon? But I mean, we are going to come back. But coming back to responsible tourism, I mean, there has been this talk about tourists going to destinations and communities are not just leaving them negatively impacted. They should be able to make sure that they preserve those communities the way they meet them. So that also has to do with, just like you said, about the hotels. So I think it has to do with both the hotel chain owners and both the tourists themselves. when it comes to being responsible, you know, in tourism. So I think that that economic leakage you talked about is something that really we need to amplify and begin to talk about, because also when it also comes to the environmental sustainability part of things, people are talking about greenwashing. People just bandied the word sustainability, but really the actual, in concrete terms, they're not really doing anything, but they're just, you know, banding the word around, we are doing X, Y, Z, but really it's all greenwashing. You know, they are not, you know, practically doing anything that is sustainable. So let me take you to the Sun S program. Offline, we had a conversation around, you know, when it comes to aviation sustainability, people want us to travel less because of the carbon emission by these airlines. But we had a conversation about the need to say we even need to travel more. I mean, contextually speaking, especially in Africa, where, unlike Europe, where we still have connectivity issues, we are still not been able to connect Africa pretty well with airline, with air travel. And then there's this talk about reducing travel, where Africa has not even caught up to the level where Europe is. So what are your thoughts about, you know, the call to reduce travel?
Yeah, it's, yeah, like we said off air before, it concerns me greatly. Because I think when we're talking about the environment, there is certainly in the Northern Hemisphere here, there's talk. I hear it in my circles, you know, down at the gym, people saying, oh, is it right to be flying off on vacation? And I'm like, God, you're kidding me? You know, you've got to. I think a lot of it is that a lot of destinations, a huge part of their economy is derived from tourism. So to say, you know, don't fly to that destination, don't travel to that destination, you're cutting off a huge part of their economy, potentially forcing them into poverty, unless you've got another industry that they can go for. And most of them, they don't. So at the Sun program, what we focus on is climate-friendly travel growth. And that's the key thing, is we're saying you still need to travel, and it's important that you do travel, because the benefits of travel, you know, we all know as we travel, and I'm sure your listeners have this as well, you grow as a person the more you travel. You know, I travel to Africa, Asia. I learn so much about the world, and I learn about different cultures and different ways of living. And I absolutely grow as a person as a result of that. And I think everybody needs to do that, because as well, if I travel to Nigeria and I spend time with a lot of Nigerian friends, it does engender peace, global peace, because it's very hard to hate somebody when you've shared a meal together, you know, and you understand the culture, because a lot of the hatred comes from ignorance. And it's very hard to be ignorant when you've sat down and you've shared a meal and you've had a few drinks and it's like, oh my God, I love Nigeria. I love Nigerians. And that's what happens. The more you travel around the world and you get this, and even though you might have had preconceived ideas that, I don't know, Argentinians, maybe they're not very friendly, somebody said, or whatever. You go to Argentina and, oh my God, I love Argentinians. They're wonderful. Their food is fabulous. I love their dancing. Yeah, you know, it's amazing. So we need to encourage people to travel. So, but they have to do it in a climate-friendly way. You talked before about, you know, when we talk about aviation, that's the big challenge. So the big challenge at the moment is aviation is a significant emitter. We know it accounts for, depending on the measurement, anything from 1.5% to 3% of global emissions, which doesn't sound much, but it's where they're emitting them. They're emitting them right into the atmosphere. So it's not good. The different solutions that we're looking at for that, obviously sustainable aviation fuel, alternative aviation fuel to fossil fuels, all of that is being looked at and developed. But we're a way off, Tony. You know, it's not an immediate one. If you're talking about fuel the traditional biofuel, sustainable aviation fuel that comes from plants, you'd have to have huge swathes of land around the world dedicated to growing those plants, and that would then impact on food supplies. So it's not an easy. It's quite nuanced to the whole conversation. Offsetting, you know, a lot of the airlines now are, you know, they're making money out of offsetting. So I'm going to book a flight to Lagos and I can pay, you know, £10 to choose my seat. I can pay another £10 to have a bag with me. And then, oh, the emissions are, you know, you can offset your emissions for £50. Click this box. Well, I mean, I'm still taking the same flight whether I click that box or not. And it's not making a blind bit of difference. And they tell me, we're going to plant trees. Well, you know, the CEO of United Airlines, I've got him on video saying this, and he's really clear about it. There isn't enough land on the planet to cover off all of the emissions in any given year. There isn't enough land. So this whole planting trees is absolute bullshit. Really, it's not doing anything. It might make you feel better by checking the box and paying £50, but in real terms, you're actually not doing anything. There isn't enough space on the planet for all of the trees that you would need. So planting trees, I'm afraid, it's well-meaning, but that's not the answer either. So what we've done at the Climate Friendly Travel Club is we've said, look, if you're a climate-friendly traveler, instead of putting the money towards trees, which is bullshit, put it towards a wallet, which we've created at the Climate Friendly Travel Club, and you put it into the wallet to compensate for your emissions by putting it in a savings wallet in your club. Then with that wallet, you can spend that at any time. So you get to keep the money. You don't lose the money like you do with the airlines. You get to keep the money and you can spend it with climate friendly travel partners. So we have a registry at the Sunex of different properties all around the world, an awful lot around Africa, actually, who are making real efforts to be more climate friendly in their operations. So what we say is that money that you would have spent offsetting, instead, spend it with some locally owned and run, by the way, properties who are working really hard on being more sustainable in their sales. So you're staying with a locally owned and run property and they're focused on sustainability. That for us feels like a better approach than, say, paying £50 to go on an offset that may or may not happen. Who knows? And like I said, honestly, there isn't enough space on the planet for all of the trees that would be needed. So the carbon removal schemes, by the way, Tony, I think they're pretty good. I think they're worth investing in. Anything that's drawing carbon out of the air. But the planting of trees, I mean, it's just a fallacy. It's a fallacy, but it's really caught on. It really captured everyone's imagination. You know, it feels good. You know, I planted 5 trees. How do you know? Where are your 5 trees? Are they double counting those trees? Or is that, so those 5 trees are from that one flight. What about my next flight? Is there going to be another 5 trees just for me? So if there's going to be 5 trees for every single passenger on every single plane in any given, come on, do the maths. I mean, really, you'd need 20 Earths to be able to plant all of the trees that would be needed. It's garbage. It's absolute garbage. But we need to start calling out. You mentioned before about greenwashing. That's going to start. It's starting already in Europe. That's starting to be legislated for now. Now they're starting to issue massive fines. If you say that you're environmentally friendly and you're not, oh my God, you're going to be landed with massive fines. So you better make sure, and I think it's going to happen globally, you better make sure that you can substantiate any climate-friendly claims that you've got. Because if you can't, you're going to be landed with a big fine and you're going to go out of business. So there's a lot of moving parts on that. But naturally, I'm optimistic, Tony. I do think there's big strides being made in sustainable aviation fuel and alternative fuel sources. There's an awful lot of talk about battery power and hydrogen. And it's interesting, you know, when we talk about the battery power, people are saying, oh, but the size of a battery that you would need would be so heavy. And I'm like, do you know how much the fuel weighs on a plane? It's tons and tons and tons. That's not light already. If you're replacing that with batteries, there's something workable there. I just think that we're maybe about 10 or 20 years off. So in the meantime, there's a limited amount of stuff we can do with regards to aviation emissions. But I would say if global emissions, if aviation accounts for between 2 and 5% of global aviation emissions, I would propose that the return on those emissions for the global economy, for alleviating different destinations out of poverty, I think they're good emissions. I know that sounds wrong, but I think they're emissions that are worth having in the world. I think there's better ways of cutting out the other 97%. And I know every industry says this, but I think the aviation emissions, I think they're a good return on emissions. And I think that's the question that we need to ask now. Instead of return on investment, we need to look at what's the return on our emissions. So if I was going to fly to, we talked about you're having a sustainability and aviation conference next year, later this year. If I was to fly over for that, I'm not going to fly over for 2 days and then fly back. if I fly over for that, I'm going to make a plan to actually see a lot of our other partners in that country, wherever it is. And I'm probably going to stay there for 2 or 3 weeks because that will represent a better return on the emissions. It's not a good enough return on my emissions to fly from the UK to Lagos just for 2 days. That feels very, very irresponsible. So if I do that, I'll be staying for 2 weeks at least, and I'll get to see other business partners and maybe have a look at other events and stuff that are nearby. I'm going to make sure I get the maximum return on emissions. So I think that's the conversation. That's the way I'd like it to go now. Is let's start talking about the return on the emissions. And I do suggest that the return on aviation emissions can be pretty good, actually, economically.
Thanks, Jed. I mean, you've really shed light on this. I know the low season traveler and your S1S program is global. Let's break it down to Africa. So tell us about, do you have specific programs or partners with the low season traveler and S1S program on the continent and areas you've gone and done projects with or done interviews or created some awareness around what you're doing on the African continent? Tell us more about it.
So with regards to low season traveler, first of all, we obviously launched during lockdown, which was really hard, Tony, because we couldn't travel anywhere, which is very frustrating. But what we did is, look, I've been quite passionate about Africa for many years. I think the continent is very, very special in a large number of ways. But I think for me, culturally, Africa is, it's just got a huge amount to offer. And I think, you know, we all have a lot to learn by visiting Africa. So I was keen to feature quite a lot of Africa. So we started to do quite a few podcasts, in particular on the wildlife parts of Africa. So we looked mainly at sub-Saharan Africa. And we started to feature destinations like Zimbabwe, South Africa, of course, Namibia. And through that, by the way, Tony, and I'm sure you get this with your podcasts, through speaking to the experts in the destinations, I learned so much. I mean, Namibia is so high on my list of places to go. I mean, it just sounds an amazing destination. Zambia, the home of the walking safari. I never knew that. Walking safaris. Now, that feels responsible, you know, rather than driving a diesel truck around the place.
Yeah.
Where there's noise as well, by the way. Instead, walking so you can hear the wildlife around. The home of the walking safari, Zambia. Never knew. I never knew. And I was like, shit, that's really cool. So I need to learn more about that. I learned about the largest mammal migration in the world, which I thought was the wildebeest. Absolutely not. There's a far larger migration which happens every year. And it happens in Zambia. And it's a bat migration. And there are millions of these things. And when you see images of it, if you do a Google image search for any of the listeners out there, do a Google image search of the bat migration in Zambia. It's absolutely out of this world. You've seen nothing like it. So we learned quite a lot. I didn't get over to do as much footage as I would have liked. I went over to the sustainability conference with Judy Keffer Gonna's organization last year in Kenya, in Mombasa. And I took the time to interview a few local hoteliers who are focused on responsibility. And we did some videos and podcasts, which was great. I'd like to do a lot more. But again, you know, the challenge is we also have to cover the costs. You know, I can't pay out of my own pocket just to keep going to different parts of Africa, even though I'd love to. We have to have a partner that's prepared to pay some of the costs. So that's been a bit of a challenge. With regards to what we're doing on the climate-friendly travel side of things, we set up 50 chapters of climate-friendly travel chapters, which are run by graduates that we train. So we have a climate-friendly travel diploma, which is university accredited. You know, it's a proper, real diploma on climate-friendly travel. And these students are from all over the world. And when they graduate, we give them the opportunity to set up a climate-friendly travel chapter in their country. And last year, we launched 50. One in each of the UN-recognized least developed countries in the world, of which about two-thirds, by the way, are in Africa. So we've launched already about 30 chapters around Africa, and it's headed up by a wonderful lady called Maud Musinya, who is based out of Zimbabwe, and she works with all of the chapter leaders. And what each one of those leaders do is they work with locally owned and run properties in their country on helping them to be more climate friendly, to be more sustainable. And we have a whole load of complementary resources which we give to these properties. And we say, hey, you know, we want to help you on that journey. Because one of the challenges that we've seen is if you look at, you know, if you Google image search or Google search sustainable hotels, most of the properties, they're all 5-star hotels. They're all, and it's starting to look like if you want to travel in a sustainable way, you've got to have big books. It's almost like a luxury item now. And that concerns me greatly. I'm really uncomfortable with that because if I want to travel to Thailand, maybe I'm not a 5-star luxury guy. And by the way, I'm not a 5-star luxury guy. I haven't got the money for it. Okay. But sustainability should be available for everybody. So if you're a 3-star property, that can still be sustainable. And so, but they need help because if you're a 3-star, if you're a small independent owned and run property in Lagos, you know, you probably haven't got a dedicated sustainability officer because you're a small setup. You can't afford one. So what do you do? It's just me. I'm the owner. I'm the managing director. I'm the chef. I'm everything. I can't do everything. I need help with this. We give you the help on the sustainability side, and it's free. It's all, ultimately, all of that is paid for, would you believe, by the government of Malta. So Malta government, they actually support all of this. They sponsor it all effectively. So we can provide all of those resources free of charge. So we're doing a huge amount in Africa. The next 50 chapters we'll be opening will be the small island developing states. So we're doing an awful lot with those as well. And some, by the way, figure in both categories. So if you look at Sao Tome and Principe, they're actually an officially recognized small island developing state. And they're also one of the least developed countries on Earth. And by the way, also utterly wonderful. They've been on my list to visit, genuinely. Since I was 15 years of age, I learned about Sao Tome and Principe, and I wanted to visit those places, and I still do. And this, again, this brings us very neatly back onto, you know, we talk about aviation. You're not going to swim there. They need to have flights to get there. So if they're going to have a tourism economy, and they need to have a tourism economy, because that's one of the things that they could really do very well, they need to have flights. They need to have the availability for people to get there. So if we want to, you know, basically bring these destinations away from developing into developed, then we need to give them an economy. And tourism is a big driver for that in these destinations.
Thank you, Jed. So talking about collaborations and partnership with your Sonairs program, I was going to ask you, do you partner with tourism boards across the African continent? Because I will naturally think they should be, you know, the champions, you know, trying to bring innovative solutions to their tourism destinations that they cover or in their country. Do you have any kind of partnerships? That's one. Secondly, do you have kind of a listing under the Sonairs program about tourism, sustainable tourism properties or hotels that that tourists can want to go to and have a listing to say, okay, if I'm going to Lagos, Nigeria, X hotel is sustainable and it's under the Sonairs program, so I can patronize them. Do you have something like that?
Exactly that. That's exactly what we have. So we have a registry of all of the properties that we work with. And on a base level on the Sonex website, which is thesunprogram.com, there's like a map of the world. And you just click on the country that you're interested in, and we have all of the properties. There, they're all listed out. And what we're working on at the moment with the Climate Friendly Travel Club is having a full listing with the images of the property and then also special offers. So we're saying to the property owners, hey, you know, for climate-friendly travelers, would you do a special offer? And by the way, we don't take a commission. So we're not booking.com or anything else where all the money, by the way, as well, goes to the Netherlands. What we're saying is go on the registry, come on the club as well, and we'll put you on the website. We're not going to charge you. Have a direct link to your booking or your reservations email or whatever. We're encouraging people to book with you directly. We're not going to take a cut. We're not going to take a commission. We want the money to stay with you. We want it to stay in your destination. And that's why we're not going to use booking.com or any of those. And I'm not picking on booking.com. I'm just saying, you know, they take a huge cut and it all goes to the Netherlands. And is that right if I'm booking to stay in Nigeria? Come on, that's not right, is it? That they should take a huge cut of it. The more of the money should stay in Nigeria. So that's exactly what we do. We have listings on the Sonex website and then also on the Travel Club. We feature the different properties and any special offers that the owners want to give us as well. And what was your first point again? I've forgotten your first point. Yeah, you asked the first question as well.
Yeah.
Tourism board.
Yeah.
We have some relationships with some of them, but we don't have as strong relationships as we would like. We more operate on the level of the small owner. So we're for the small guys, to be clear. We feel that there's a lot of talk goes on with the big guys and the tourist boards. They do what they do best. We'd like to engage with a lot more tourist boards, especially in Africa, actually. And we'd like to partner with them. But at the moment, we haven't got through. You know, it's really hard. You'll know yourself, Tony. It's hard to get to the right people in the different tourist boards. They're so big. So, you know, if you go to an international fair like ITB Berlin, which is coming up, getting to speak to the right people is really hard. And the right people who are really engaged in this stuff as well. Because sometimes, you know, you'll have it where you're having a conversation about sustainability, and depending on who that country is, they're sort of saying, you know what, right now we don't care about sustainability. We just want travelers. We don't care. We're not picky. And I understand that. I understand that completely. You know, if you're looking to drive your economy, you know, the first thing is, shit, we just need to get people, whether or not they're sustainable or not. Who cares? We just need people, especially after the pandemic. And that was one of the effects of the pandemic, was it kind of set, ironically, the sustainability question back a little bit. Because when everyone talked the talk during the pandemic of, we're going to build back better, we're going to do it differently this time around. And as soon as the doors opened to travel again, everyone was like, excuse my language, fuck it, we'll take anything. Just come, because we need you. You've been 3 years without tourists. We'll take anything. And that was so that set things back a little bit. I think as we're getting now to be a little bit more stable in the global travel industry, I think the questions now are coming back onto sustainability again. And I think it's starting to happen where people are now demanding sustainable options. And that's where, again, we have to be prepared for that as small businesses as well. Because, like I say, the small businesses, we don't have the luxury of having huge amounts of money to throw at this. We have to do it in a defined way. And I've got to, on that point, pay tribute to, there's an organization, a property that I went to see, which is in Kilifi, just near Mombasa, which is just a fabulous spot. Have you been to Kilifi, Tony?
I've been to Mombasa, but I've not been to Kilifi.
Oh my God. You've missed out on an absolute, honestly, you've got to go to Kilifi.
I was at Diani.
I was at Diani as well. And then I went on to Kilifi, to this backpackers, where they do everything brilliantly, sustainable. They've got limited money. They're not hugely wealthy. It's a backpackers. You know, it's quite rough. For me, it was amazing. Composting toilets, reusing the rainwater. They did everything. And they were saying it doesn't have to be expensive. They reused bottles, you know, like wine bottles. And they would cut them to make glasses. So all of their glasses were the bottoms of wine bottles. So cool. And really quirky. And I really kind of enjoyed that. But they're recycling quite a lot. But also in Kilifi, just so you know, and for your listeners as well, Kilifi is one of the places in the world that has the best bioluminescence in the sea. So when you go in the sea off Kilifi at nighttime, as soon as you move, everything lights up with this fluorescent glow. Honestly, it's like nothing. It's truly, it's magical. It's absolutely magical. It took my breath away. I've never had an experience like it. I've seen the northern lights up in Norway. I've seen a lot of nature's phenomenon. I've never seen anything like I witnessed in Kilifi. And I said to the owners there, I said, you know, like, Christ, how did I not know about this? And they were saying, you know, not a lot of people do know about it. But we as the locals, and this is key, we as the locals, you know, that's just what the water does. It's just normal. And when it's normal, it's no big deal. But as an outsider, for me, oh my God, truly magical. Kilifi, just outside Mombasa. Listeners, honestly, can't recommend it highly enough. But my point is, it doesn't have to be expensive. And that's what we're doing with those smaller accommodation providers. We're giving them the tools to try and get on their sustainability journey and it doesn't cost them anything to partner with us. And we're showing them techniques and things that they can do and learning from others. So, you know, we have a podcast as well, the Climate Friendly Travel Podcast. And I speak to the owners and I say, hey, tell us, what can some of our listeners do if they haven't got much money? What can they do? Give us some of your tips. And they give tips to each other. And that's really well received, that podcast, because some of those owners are, they're inspirational, Tony. They're really, you know, you're listening to them and you're just thinking, oh my God, you're speaking so much sense. It's so valuable. So that's what we do as well. We bring them into our community and we share the knowledge among all of us. And, you know, my final point on that is, when we talk about sharing the knowledge in aviation, and I worked in aviation for, you know, about 15 years. In aviation, the airlines compete worldwide vociferously. They compete fiercely. But the one issue that they will always collaborate on, the competition stops when you talk about safety. When you talk about safety in aviation, everybody, all the airlines collaborate together evenly. What I'd like to see in hospitality is exactly the same when we're talking about sustainability. We're going to compete with each other and we'll compete hard as well. But when it talks about sustainability, we share the knowledge. We all come in together because if we get that right, it benefits everybody. And that's what I think we need to do on hospitality.
Thank you very much, Jed. You just, as we round up, you just put it succinctly. So what we're trying to do at aviation sustainability, even the world is typically aviation, because aviation just has works with the whole ecosystem with hospitality and tourism, is really to see how we can come together under that ecosystem and begin to really, in our initiatives, whether in our companies or the airlines or hotel establishments, have sustainable initiatives that we can all agree on and push that agenda of sustainability that benefits the people and the planet. You know, yes, and it doesn't say that when you're thinking about sustainability, it takes away from profit. I mean, you can still be sustainable, be profitable when dealing with people and planet. So that will give more, expose when we announce our 2024 Aviation Sustainability Africa podcast conference coming out later this year. Sometime in September, we'll make the announcement. Of course, you are going to be there, and we'd love to also make you one of the speakers because you are a thought leader in this area. And I want to thank you very much for coming on the show. Please, in your last word, tell us how we can get in touch, all my listeners can get in touch, or to know more about the Low Season Traveler and your S1S program.
Oh, thank you. Well, listen, first of all, I just want to say thank you so much for the opportunity, Tony. It's always great to catch up with you, and always good to speak. If any listeners are interested in Low Season Traveler, it's lowseasontraveler.com. The SunX program is thesunprogram.com, and the Climate Friendly Travel Club is climatefriendlytravelclub.com. You can find all the contact details on there and all the information that you need. And if anybody wants to reach out to me directly, I'm also open to that. It's GED Jed at lowseasontraveler.com. And thanks so much, Tony. Again, really appreciate it. Nice to have a great conversation with you as always, my friend.
Thank you very much, Jed. And looking forward to seeing you at our conference physically. It's been a while, so we need to catch up. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. It's been the Aviation Sustainability Africa podcast. Do follow us on social media handles at Aviators Africa, and to know more about our features on our podcast, and of course to let you know more about Nutrients. Thank you very much, Jed, and hope to see you soon. Bye bye for now.
Thanks.